Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
It feels so good to be back. So much fun sitting down here getting ready to talk Georgia football. And for me personally, so enjoyable to reflect back on just an incredible collection of memories that this year's Dog Nation crew provided. Some of this I'll talk to you about throughout the course of the next, you know, little bit. And I say this as sincerely as I'm capable of saying anything. You know, the thing that makes what I get to do fun, and obviously it's the greatest job in the world, but when you interact with Georgia fans through events that we have, whether they be like our Dog Nation Invasions or a Dog Nation Cruise, you just sort of realize that Georgia fans really are, just by and large, a great group of people. And the whole idea of the DGD, the damn good dog, a lot of good dog people go with us on a cruise experience like this. And while y'all know I love my Royal Caribbean cruises, I have a great time every time I go. I also, on this particular cruise, love it so much more when I see other people having fun and other people having a great time. And I'm really just sort of blown away by what Dog Nation has become and the growth that we've experienced. You obviously see this with, like, say, me or, you know, Jeff or Mike or now Kaylee doing some of the stuff they do. Connor, who stayed back at home, did a great job last week. He's kind of our designated survivor, keeping us up to date on all the news that was happening there. You see that from them. But what you don't see is the stuff, you know, kind of behind the scenes. You maybe hear me talk a little bit about BJ every now and then, but you know, the leadership that he's shown for us and the freedom that he's given us to do events like that. When we have people like Gwen and Abby who go with us on a trip like this. These are not names that you hear me talk about on air. You certainly don't see them or read them or, you know, hear them around our website, but they're kind of the backbone of some of what we're able to do. Casey is as well, who, you know, is kind of stepping up in kind of a logistics way to help us, you know, plan all of this. And just the amazing stuff that they're able to pull off that we really have, I would say, you know, a behind-the-scenes team here right now that does some amazing stuff. You know, Jay and Cody, part of our, you know, production staff, Cody, who you saw on the show on Friday, but, you know, putting some of the video stuff together that we put out into the world there at our Dog Nation cruise this past week. Obviously, Jessica Slater, you hear me talk about her and, you know, her assistant Martha. We obviously love Robin Washington from Royal Caribbean, who was not able to be with us here this week. But it was just an unbelievable experience, and I was so grateful to have it. Now, with that said, you kind of transition to kind of where we are now. A lot happened while we were gone, and don't you know I was trying to follow all of that. And when you sit back in this chair after being away, at least in terms of live shows for the last week, you're sort of left to wonder, well, how do you go about talking about all of this without it sort of sounding like a haphazard mess, like I'm an auctioneer? I already talk a little too fast as it is. That's one of my fatal flaws. And on a day like this, there's so much to say that you would be tempted just to sort of come in here and fly around and, you know, use a lot of words, but perhaps never really focus enough on anything to really get any real content done. So we're going to try to avoid that today, and we're going to try to keep it somewhat simple in that I'm going to start with the most recent stuff that's out there, and we'll sort of use that to work our way back through the last week, and we'll sort of see how all of this works out. John Stinchcomb stops by. He's going to help us with this coming up in a couple of minutes there as well. So let me begin with this. The 2024 NFL draft is just in the books, and there is already a lot of energy now about the 2025 NFL draft. Now, I know some people are always like, well, why do we have to immediately sort of look ahead to way too early top 25 or way too early NFL draft mocks or way too early whatever else? Some of that's just fun, but in this particular case, I also believe that what's being said about Georgia a year from now is also pretty instructive about what's going on for Georgia at the moment, too. So let me show you this. There are already odds out there. Anand Nandori shares this. Already odds out there on who could be next year's number one overall draft pick. Shedeur Sanders, perhaps somewhat surprisingly, is the sort of betting odds favorite here at the moment at kind of plus 100 to be the number one overall pick. But just behind him, a pair of SEC quarterbacks, Carson Beck and Quinn Ewers. This is something we sort of briefly discussed on our shows last week, is that it's going to be really fun to see the head-to-head quarterback matchups that Carson Beck has a chance to be a part of next year. The one with Ewers in October is clearly an example of that, but there will be others. A lot of chances for Beck to sort of show what he's all about. But pushing that aside for the moment, The fact that Beck right now is at 3-1 to be the number one overall pick for next year is pretty interesting when you also realize that there are a couple of other current Georgia players who have posted odds there as well. A guy who dominated on G-Day, Mikael Williams, is basically 15-1 to be number one overall pick next year. And I love to see the love that Ernest Green is getting right now. You know, one of those guys that I think for Georgia maybe a year ago was perhaps a little bit of an unsung hero, but evidence that's about to change as Green has among the best overall odds to be next year's number one overall pick at 7.5-1 to be the number one overall pick for next year. So, and if, by the way, if you look at some of the other mock draft stuff that's out there, you know, Green and Mikael and Carson are all mocked into the first round. Some of those drafts also have Malachi Starks going there as well. But in this particular case, you've got three current Georgia players with pretty good odds to be next year's number one overall pick, which I really, really like. Now, let me tell you one more thing I really like about this as what it says about Georgia on the field for this upcoming season. There's a phrase you've heard me use before, and perhaps maybe I've used it too much in the past, but I do really believe in this as kind of a football idea, that there are some positions that are premium positions. There are some positions that, and the NFL draft is a perfect example of this, they just have more innate value than other positions do. Football is still a team game. All 11 guys in the field, they obviously matter. But there are some positions that just have greater monetary value or sort of perceived positional value. There are some positions that just seem to mean more. And I would say among those, quarterback, left tackle, the blindside protector, edge rusher. Those are positions that year after year, time after time, are just demonstrated to be premium positions. So the fact that Georgia right now, as you sort of move ahead into the conversation about what next year's NFL draft could look like, has three players at these, what I believe, premium positions, blindside protector, edge rusher, and quarterback, who are vying to potentially be the number one overall draft pick, to me that tells you everything you need to know about why Georgia is going to be considered a national championship favorite for this upcoming season. Now, Ohio State's also getting a lot of love in these mock drafts, things like that. No one says for this upcoming year it's going to be easy. But if you want to really kind of hang your hat on a prediction for Georgia getting back and winning a national championship again, that's one of the things you got to understand. The pathway for Georgia getting there is it's not just good and it's not just good across the board. It might be especially good at the positions that truly matter, and that could be a very clear path for Georgia in getting back to the national championship. Now, there is something else that's important about what you just saw there. I want to zero in on Carson Beck here for a moment. It is fairly remarkable that Beck's betting odds right now to be the number one overall pick are 3-1. Yeah, Shador's getting a lot of love, and yeah, you know, a guy like Quinn Ewers is right in there. But 3-1 for Beck is an incredible compliment about where he is viewed to be at this stage of his football life going into this pivotal 2024 season. And it is obviously potentially the culmination of an amazing football journey for him, for a guy that signed in 2020. We didn't hear word one from him in his first year on campus. In 2021, he had that opportunity to perhaps step up and be the backup quarterback the day that JT Daniels was hurt against UAB, as has been well chronicled. Beck even himself admits wasn't quite ready for that opportunity. At that point in time, I think many of us were fairly honest to say, I'm not quite so sure what Georgia has in Carson Beck then. And in 2022, there was this belief, well, maybe he is kind of developing into something. You know, he's learning and watching Stetson Bennett. Maybe he's growing into something. And in 2023, took the opportunity and full advantage of his chance to be the Georgia starter, and now he is where he is. And that story, that kind of proof of concept, that template, if you will, for how it can look for a Georgia quarterback, I think is really instructional in another story we saw play out while we were gone and not doing live shows. The fact that Jaden Rashad, and we'll show you this on the screen, took his visit to UGA, about a week ago, took his visit to UGA and ultimately ended up making his commitment there to the University of Georgia shortly after that. Sort of a one-and-done style thing of once Rashad saw the situation at Georgia, he was ready to go, boom, he's ready to move on and become a part of this future of the Georgia program as a guy who's watching here in 2024, we would believe, and then competing for a chance to be starting quarterback in 2025. And Some of the conversations I had about this on our Dog Nation cruise I thought were pretty interesting because, and I always love the sort of honest conversations that sometimes fans can have with each other. There were a few people saying to me, you know, I'm not really quite so sure how I feel about this because all they know about Rashada, to their own admission, is what they've heard. A guy that, you know, got a chance to play last year for Arizona State as a freshman, got a little banged up, and then after that, it seemed to sort of become a lost year for him in Arizona State. Obviously, everybody knows about the high-profile NIL stuff. If he's going to Miami, now he's flipping to Florida. Now that NIL deal is falling through. To some Georgia fans, just being completely frank here for a moment, that seemed like a lot of drama and not necessarily in keeping with what Georgia typically, kind of typically buys into or expects players to buy into when they come to a place like UGA. And the response I would give back anytime that came up is, I'm actually fairly certain that Rashada is, you know, kind of on board with the plan for what Georgia wants all of its players to be. Otherwise, he wouldn't be coming. That you know, Georgia is one of these programs that well documents what's expected of players, how hard you're going to work, how challenging the competition is going to be, the fact that it isn't necessarily for everybody. Georgia doesn't make a lot of secrets about that. So players that willingly sign up for this, doing this of their own volition, they're able to sort of self-select. They're able to decide, is what Georgia's offering me, both the good and the challenge of that, is that for me, or would another place be better? And when a guy like Rashada says, this is for me, then to me, that sort of tells me everything I need to know about his character, the fact that knowing the situation, knowing what's going to be expected, knowing the challenge of eventually emerging as a Georgia starting quarterback, if he's choosing to willingly sign up for that, that tells me everything I need to know about the kind of personal integrity or internal character that might be driving him. And for a lot of Georgia fans, we're like, well, you know, how could that be? Why would Rashada be okay with this when there's potentially a lot of other places that he could potentially go and maybe be the starting quarterback here right now? I think the answer to that is actually fairly simple. It's the story I just told you. The fact that Carson Beck's 3-1 to be next year's number one overall draft pick after not playing at all in 2020, barely playing in 2021, becoming a backup in 2022, really kind of emerging as one of college football's young new stars in 2023. That story becomes the kind of thing, it's almost like a campfire tale. It's the sort of thing that players tell themselves of, well, if Beck can do that, why can't I? And wouldn't it make sense for me to be here at the same place that Carson Beck made all this happen? That's how a guy like Jaden Rashada, at one point in time, was sort of viewed as one of these ultimate NIL bonus babies, would now be okay with being a backup quarterback and biding his time because it is apparently going to work out so well for Carson Beck. Not to mention that, another former Arizona State quarterback like Jaden Daniels, who came to the SEC, who had to fight like mad to hold off Garrett Nussmeier just to be the LSU starter, and ultimately went on to win the Heisman Trophy, and he himself became a very high draft pick there on Thursday night. That's also part of the proof of concept that might be driving Jaden Rashada here. So the overall bottom line to sort of start us off here, back being live again, is when you look at the 2025 NFL draft and the early buzz for Georgia players there, I think it makes you feel really good about the current situation there at UGA. If Georgia really does have a left tackle like Ernest Green, obviously it appears that it does, and an edge rusher like Mikael Williams and a quarterback like Carson Beck, those are pretty important building blocks for what the future of this program could be in the near term here in this upcoming season, perhaps bringing home another national championship. But the long-term future as well, the fact that Beck was patient, the fact that Beck bided his time, the fact that Beck got better while he was watching, someone like Jaden Rashada, who we would think probably had all kinds of options of where he might be able to go, says, I want to go and be the next Carson Beck. That is an incredible selling point for Georgia right now, that this is now the kind of program that develops quarterbacks and potentially puts them to the front end of the NFL draft the same way it has for so many other positions. Very, very telling in terms of kind of how Georgia's viewed. Jaden Rashada's decision to come here speaks very well of what the future of the quarterback position for the Dogs could certainly be. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Boy, it's just great to be back. Thank you so much for being with us here today. And thank you to our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Make it all possible for you there as well. Whether you're watching a video or radio or podcast, whatever else, energy efficient windows and doors. And, you know, it's hot now, right? And so you got air conditioning on, and it's one of those things when you spend big bucks and your AC, and right now you do, what you don't want to do is waste any of that money. And that's where the gorgeous product, the great looking Pella windows and doors, also have kind of an energy efficient sort of money saving component to them. Because when you have the really well-fitted and really well-constructed windows and doors, for which Pella Windows and Doors is famous, you're talking about keeping energy on the inside of your house where it's supposed to be. And that's a good thing that could potentially save you some money on your bills, but also incredible curb appeal improvement here or there as well, really making your house look as good as it possibly can on the outside there as well. There's also some incredibly innovative Pella products there as well, like the sort of built-in shades and things like that can kind of give you all kinds of different looks and different experiences. Just a lot of things that make Pella Window and Door of Georgia, of course, viewed to be the best. So please, stop by and see them at their Experience Center there in Duluth. You can put your hands on the product. You can sort of feel it and recognize what makes it different, what makes it better. You can also have them come out to you for a no-pressure consultation. They don't want to push into something. They simply want to educate you so that you're able to make the most informed decision about why, when it's time to upgrade and make your home look as good and feel as good as it possibly can, Pella Window and Door of Georgia is the obvious and irresistible choice on all of that. Great savings here right now, too, because between now and the end of this month, only one more day, by the way, to take advantage of this, you can get 10% off a Pella project and 0% APR for 24 months with payment. So please, give them a call, 678-638-1429. That's 678-638-1429. Or you can find them online, PellaOfGA.com/DogNation. One more time, PellaOfGA.com/DogNation. Just please tell them that BA from Dog Nation Daily said they'd take good care of you, because I do know they will. And tell them I sent you, because it's going to be a great experience for you. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. All right, we have John Stinchcomb here coming up in a moment. There are a few stories from last week that I am going to specifically ask John about to kind of help me make sure I give to all of you. So we're going to do that with him coming up in a moment. Prior to that, though, I want to go around the doghouse today, poured by our friends at Dr. Pepper. And I think that the biggest thing that happened while I was gone was the fact that Christian Miller reversed course on his decision to transfer and decided to stay with the program. And I'll be totally honest about this. When that message came out, whatever night it was, I guess it'd be Wednesday night, is that right? Wednesday night, that message comes out, that Miller's transferring. I was pretty bummed about that, because Miller's a guy that I like. I also didn't want bad news to happen while I was gone, totally self-serving, completely honest, and just kind of really sort of bummed, because I really sort of thought that based on that news, Monday morning we get back here to do the show, we're just talking about the fact that, you know, hey, you had this player, you had excitement about the upcoming year, somebody swooped in, sort of money whipped you a little bit, and now he's gone. That's what I sort of thought the nature of the conversation was going to be. So how happy was I to find out, nope, false alarm, Miller's changed his mind. In fact, let me show you this on the screen from Christian Miller here, that Hayes Fawcett had some of this, saying that he's got unfinished business with his brothers, 100% locked in go dogs, and that's essentially what Miller himself also said on the X platform there as well. Christian Miller obviously returning to Georgia. Now, as I sat there on the beach at Perfect Day Coco Cay, Hideaway Beach, if you will, the adults-only enclave there is a part of Perfect Day Coco Cay. As I sat there and kind of thought about this, let me tell you what came to mind for me. When I was, like, young, teenager, back in the 90s, is when Michael Jordan was dominating the NBA. And there was a phrase that would be used to describe Jordan at the time that I thought was really telling. That, you know, Jordan obviously won 6 NBA titles, and over the course of that time, you know, he beat Barkley for his third. He beat Karl Malone, for his fifth and his sixth title. And you had these great players of their era, like Charles Barkley, like Karl Malone, like Sean Kemp and Gary Payton, you know, like Clyde Drexler. You had these guys that were trying to get that career validation against Michael Jordan. But somehow they would come close in some cases, but not be able to get over the hump. And what was said was at the time, and I think this is just so telling, and it's why, you know, people of my generation obviously view Michael Jordan to be the greatest basketball player of all time, that ultimately what Jordan wanted was he wanted his fifth or his sixth NBA title, his third NBA title. He wanted that next NBA title more than you wanted your first. So Karl Malone was hungry for a title, but not as hungry as Jordan was for another title. Same thing for Charles Barkley, or same thing for other players like that. And I think that's incredibly telling. And I think it's also incredibly relevant for this discussion about Christian Miller from this point. There's a little bit of a belief out there that when it comes to breaking through and winning championships, something we've seen Georgia do now twice in the Kirby Smart era, that all you've got to do is you just got to want it. And if you're hungry enough, and if you want it bad enough, and if you can sell your boosters on it well enough, that hunger becomes its own propulsion. And USC is so desperate to have a good defense. So therefore, their desperation is going to cause them to spend a bunch of money, because that's the thought, right? That if Miller had left, he was probably going to USC. That USC's desperation for a defense, its desperation to kind of get back to relevance and compete for championship again, that hunger, that desperation is enough to propel them to steal a Christian Miller, or propel them to steal a Justice Terry, or steal a whatever else, because they want it so bad. But you see in these moments that Georgia wants its next title oftentimes more passionately, more intensely than Lincoln Riley wants his first, or Ryan Day wants his first, or whoever it is that we're sort of comparing to here. Because, you know, this idea that Georgia, after winning two championships, is going to get fat and happy, and it's not exactly minding its own cupboard, and guys like Christian Miller are going to slip away because USC is either just more nimble or more aggressive or more whatever else. Moments like this remind you that's still not true, that Georgia has won a couple of championships, and Georgia has had an unprecedented level of roster depth. But that unprecedented level of success that Georgia has enjoyed has not made them any less hungry for the future. That whatever had to be done behind the scenes, and we'll never know the full story on all of this, but whatever had to be done to sort of keep Christian Miller happy enough to keep him here at UGA, Georgia found a way to get that done, because it still wants more success more than some of these coaches and some of these programs want its first real, true taste of success. As I've told you, you've got to have great defensive linemen. One way or another, you cannot win a championship without a great defensive line, or at least a very, very, very good defensive line. And the only way to have a great defensive line is to have great defensive linemen. And the best that I can tell, as someone who just tries to follow this stuff and talk to people who are smarter than me, the best that I can tell, if you want great defensive linemen right now, you've got to know how to play the game. And you've got to be willing to roll your sleeves up and kind of get in the mud and play the game the way that it's currently being played. And Georgia showed you in this Christian Miller situation, they are more than capable of playing the game based on whatever the rules are right now, based on whatever the terms of combat are right now. Georgia is more than capable and more than willing to do that when it truly matters. The Christian Miller story mattered, and Georgia found a way to win. You love that. And that is Around the Doghouse, poured today by our friends at Dr. Pepper. Now, I'll also tell you this. What a great addition to our Dog Nation cruise. Dr. Pepper was there as well, one of our sponsors for our draft night party. A ton of great Dr. Pepper giveaways, some Dr. Pepper swag. There's also a brand new flavor for Dr. Pepper coming out this summer, which we're going to tell you about more. We had a chance to sort of kind of showcase people on that a little bit and give them an idea. But when the Dr. Pepper popped out, everybody kind of looked at me and said, B.A., we knew you wouldn't be at this draft party if there wasn't a great presence of Dr. Pepper on hand. And there clearly was. We love that. And it's a big part of what I do all summer long, right? Last night, my wife and I, we were sitting on the porch and just were talking about everything we have going on. And, you know, I had my Dr. Pepper right there, just sort of sipping on that in the rocking chair and just sort of sitting there and watching a beautiful spring evening as the sun started to go down. And Dr. Pepper went great with that. It truly is something I enjoy. It's a pepper thing. You hear us say that all the time. But for me, this is a real deal, because my special moments are always made even more enjoyable when it comes to Dr. Pepper. So when you're at Kroger or wherever it is you're doing your grocery shopping, you want to scoop up some Dr. Pepper, make your spring and summer even more enjoyable. I think I'll be really glad you did. Dr. Pepper bringing Around the Doghouse to us here today. All right, so we have got a lot to discuss. A lot of this related to the NFL draft. A lot of this related to everything happening around Georgia football. You've heard enough from me. How about an expert opinion from our next guest, the former UGL American? Let's talk to John Stinchcomb right now here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia.
Athens and across the SEC, or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
It is such a thrill to me to talk to John Stinchcomb again. Always happy to have him here. Always looking so stately and presidential with the rich mahogany and the leather-bound books and the fancy office chair This is a man of business, and obviously he's got the office that would certainly suggest all of that. But John, in all seriousness, a lot has happened since you and I have last spoken. But I believe that pound for pound, the decision of Christian Miller after considering transferring and then deciding not to, that may be the single biggest piece of news in terms of what impacts Georgia here right now. Do you agree with that?
Well, he was certainly projected and will continue to be a big piece of this defensive front. I think he brings something unique compared to the rest of these guys just with his frame. So, you know, I remember Coach Smart at the end of that first national championship. He's like, we're not the hunted. We're still hunting. And that seems to continue to ring true. It's not like we're just going to sit back and let other programs try to poach some of our better players and guys that we're going to count on moving forward. Christian Miller falls into that category. I mean, he very easily could have gone elsewhere. I think Georgia was active in a number of fronts, not just NIL and that form of retention, but understanding what's ahead of this entire program and the role that he can play. That's a big piece for this defensive front and this team that continues to build and stack resources. And those resources are people. And when they realize that they're valued and that there's a place for them here to be a part of something that's much bigger than themselves, I think that's what Georgia sells, and that's what they deliver on.
Yeah, let me try to say it like this. You know, when it comes to a guy like Julian Juju Lewis, a five-star quarterback we've talked about plenty, I think when you look at how Georgia has responded to that recruitment, I think what Georgia said is we don't necessarily feel obligated to play the game that might be required to win with a guy like Lewis. And Georgia stands on pretty firm ground as to why it might not want to or feel like it doesn't have to do that. After all, a former walk-on became a Heisman finalist quarterback for UGA. So therefore, whatever Georgia's doing at the quarterback position sort of already seems to work. But John, just to be as candid as I possibly can, there are no Stetson Bennett's on the defensive line. There just are not. There are no, like, you know, plucky underdog, you know, heroic, came out of nowhere stories when it comes to defensive line. The best defensive linemen, in my mind, are typically the ones that sort of look like the best defensive linemen. And so, therefore, that willingness to say, hey, talent has to be a priority of this position, and you sort of have to pay the price required, whether it's NIL or just whatever it is, whatever the story behind the scenes is, that you know, there is a premium on the talent and the sort of measurable characteristics of defensive linemen that doesn't necessarily hold as much weight when it comes to other positions necessarily. That's why I think the Miller thing is such a big deal, is because, you know, at other spots, Georgia can say, hey, listen, we're not going to be held hostage by anybody or in any negotiation. We're going to find guys who want to play and we'll find a way to develop them. When it comes to defensive line, I just don't think there's a shortcut to putting a good unit out there. It's got to be made up of really top talents. And right now, those top talents do seem to have some bidding leverage.
Yeah, and I think they're few and far between on both sides of the ball, offensive and defensive line, the guys that are entering the portal that can help programs. So I think that's probably why it was so noteworthy. When Miller enters into the portal, you're going, whoa, hold up. This is a guy that can play at a high level that for one of the top programs in the country. And as a Georgia guy, you realize that you just don't pluck another one off the tree and say, all right, we didn't lose that much. That's a position group. Really, if you can own and dominate both sides of that line of scrimmage, then you create opportunities. I think what we've seen is a surge in the prowess on the edges, cornerbacks, wide receivers. But if you can own the line of scrimmage, as what we saw in some of our biggest games, ones that we won and ones that we fell short on, including the SEC championship last year, that it still matters how you play in the trenches. And being able to retain some of the best defensive linemen is going to remain a huge priority for any program. And you don't just say, oh, we've got another guy waiting in his wings. And we do. I mean, we've got other talented players, but they are few and far between. And I think this is a big step for Georgia's program heading into this year and beyond, of the ability to once again retain a guy that is going to be a key piece to the equation. Similar to Amarius Mims last year or year before, whenever it was, when he was looking at Florida State, I think the ability to keep in-house talent continuing to wear the red and black is a staple that we're going to have to lean in on time and time again. Every time this portal opens, there is a press to retain some of these guys that we know can be huge factors in this coming season.
Another big story has emerged since you and I last spoke. And listen, what I don't know could fill the Grand Canyon. I'm often surprised, but I don't know that anything was more surprising to me in terms of how quickly it materialized than Jaden Rashada, who a lot of folks feel like they know something about because of what went on with his recruitment. NIL deal at Florida falls through, ends up at Arizona State. A little bit of a lost first year for him after an injury there, maybe a little bit of growing pain, kind of transitioning to college life. What do you make of the fact that now Jaden Rashada is seemingly content to wait and then assumingly only promised a chance to compete next year and perhaps being okay with that when almost certainly other teams would give him a pretty clear path to being a starter, perhaps even as soon as right now? What do you make about the fact that all of a sudden Rashada seems to be, you know, interested in charting a little bit of a different path for himself? What do you make of the story?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it's another key to Georgia, their persistence in recruiting players at the highest level. And I think one of the selling points for Georgia is the proven track record for guys that are willing and able to be a part of this program, even when they're not that key player, that when your time comes, you'll be better situated for it. And all the goals and hopes and dreams that you have of playing beyond can be realized. They have case after case and player after player to speak into that sales pitch, if you will, and recruiting tactic when you approach some of these highly talented players of saying, if you become a part of this program, even if your time is not now, when your time comes, one, you'll be better prepared for it, and two, it will be enough. If you're enough, the preparation and the opportunity will be enough for you to reach your goals. And for these players that are looking for opportunities, you know, a lot of the times it's, well, what can you do for me now? And I think there takes a certain level of maturity to say, I need to learn. I'm not where I want to be, but this might provide and should provide an opportunity for me to get to where I want to go. And it's not going to be an easy path. Nothing is. There's no golden tickets that are passed out at the University of Georgia. You come here and you're going to start. You come here and you're going to play. That's not what's promised. I think what's promised is there's going to be an opportunity for you to compete. And for high-level players, for guys that are super competitive, that believe in themselves, that's an opportunity that you want to take. It may not be now, but when my opportunity comes, I will be better prepared for it. And I think that is what Georgia lives on. That's what they thrive on. And that's what they've proven to find success, not only as a team, but for individuals. You come here and there's better opportunity for you.
At the risk of oversimplifying this, my assumption is this would be a much tougher sell for Georgia if Carson Beck wasn't charting a path that looks so appealing right now. The fact that he was also, you know, forced to be patient and at different times, maybe a lot of folks may have even assumed that Beck's just not going to pan out. Well, now, you know, he's 3-1 to be the number one overall pick, you know, in next year's draft, and obviously could win the Heisman Trophy on the field for Georgia here right now. That's selling Rashada on a path of patience a little bit easier when you see how fruitful that journey might end up being for Carson Beck. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's the same thing. You know, we just saw the draft this past weekend, and for undrafted free agents, guys that didn't hear their name called, they're probably looking at track records because track records matter. Can I go to a program and make the team even if I'm competing with somebody that they did draft? Does this staff have a history of saying, I want to keep the best guys around? Well, that's the issue with the NFL. For college guys, they're going, all right, if you're selling me on that I may not have my opportunity now, do you have a track record of A, developing guys, and B, when that opportunity comes, they can still seize the hopes and dreams that every player that Georgia recruits, they pretty much all have that same goal in mind, right? They all want to be in the NFL. They all want to be that star guy. And for Georgia, the promise is we'll compete. You can come here and compete, and we're going to develop you as good, if not better, than any program in the country. Even if it's not, you get a bajillion reps on Saturday just because of the way we practice, the standard in which we hold one another to and the culture that we've created, you will be better situated for when that opportunity comes if you're willing to work for it.
I love the fact that Ernest Green is already getting buzz for next year's draft. I really feel like he was an unsung hero on this past year's team. I thought he played an incredibly solid, you know, version of that left tackle spot, and maybe sometimes without fanfare. And to think that, you know, he could kind of continue what has been an incredible run for Georgia with these offensive tackles in the NFL draft. You know, obviously with Mims here this year, who I want to get to with you here in a moment, you know, but you go back and you look at Broderick Jones prior to that, and obviously you want to go back to early days of Kirby Smart there too. They've had an incredible run with offensive tackles in the NFL draft. What do you make of the chatter that's already seeming to form around Green going into what's going to be a pivotal year for him as now kind of a veteran starter at Georgia?
Yeah, I hope he doesn't listen to it is what I'm hoping for, because what I saw in the spring game is, you know, he's super athletic, moves well. There's some technique stuff that he can continue to improve on. And I do think that he could very well be one of the best tackles in the game, but there's work to be done. And yeah, you want to see that sophomore jump, if you will. He's had a year of playing and did so admirably, with the exception of just a handful of plays. I know, you know, that Dallas Turner play in the SEC championship, people will point to. Hopefully that's a fuel to the fire, right? For a guy that's competitive, and all reports say that he is, that you want to continue to develop and be the very best, because candidly, I think he's got all the tools to be that. I mean, the way he uses his frame, as athletic as he is with his base, there is a high ceiling for him as a player. Now, yeah, spring game, there's still some technique stuff that he can clean up. Not surprising. But if you start reading your own press clippings and say, well, here, you know, I'm already projected as that next in line. Well, they all had to earn it on their own. And yeah, there's no reason to think that he won't. But that's certainly my hope for him, because he's so talented and his ceiling is so high that he's willing to continue to put in the work to improve as a player and not just rest on that God-given ability and freakish nature that he possesses.
All right. In the time we have left, I want to talk about what I thought was maybe the buzziest thing to maybe even come out of the NFL draft this past week. And that's the stuff that Nick Saban said about Amarius Mims after Mims was drafted in the first round by the Cincinnati Bengals. And the first part of this is the idea that only started a small number of games at, you know, Georgia. I find that to be pretty unfair given the fact that the more veteran players in front of him in previous years were successful. I mean, I don't think that's a knock on Mims that he was, you know, not starting behind, you know, high level kind of upperclassman style players who were going on to have great success. I think that's a little bit unfair from Saban. But the thing that was like the most, I guess, talked about was the fact that Saban said the injury that Mims sustained during the SEC championship was an example of Mims taking himself out of the game. In other words, you know, maybe the belief on the Georgia sideline was that Mims could have stayed in, but it was Mims' choice not to play. And I think, John, you're a player, so you would obviously have a better opinion on this than I do, but I think that's a pretty pointed comment from Saban. That's a pretty serious allegation to sort of, you know, put on a player unless you've got pretty good reason to say it. And even on the ship last week, I found that statement to be really eye-opening from Coach Saban about Amarius Mims. What do you make by, I mean, I think you have to call this an accusation by Saban that Mims chose not to play in the SEC championship when perhaps other people thought he was maybe healthy enough that he should have been able to.
Yeah, I think it's a curiosity that Coach Saban doesn't hold on his own. I think there are many, I know that there are many that have that same speculation or curiosity as to the exact circumstances that played out, not only in that game, but just for the remainder of the season. Tightrope surgery is no joke. He had surgery. He had a legitimate ankle injury. And how I'm coming at this, BA, is I've got friends that are O-line coaches across the NFL, and I talked to a number of them. And many times that conversation would circle back to Amarius and want to know more about him and his makeup more than what they saw on film, because the film that he did put out there is pretty exceptional. And I had one coach say that he arguably looks like the most refined pass blocker coming out, like just natural ability to mirror and stay in front and look dominant in times in the pass game. And I believe it. So the questions then turn to, different from Broderick Jones, who didn't, he didn't have a lot of tape in comparison to, four-year starters that, this guy's played 40-plus games. Well, that's not been the case. But for Amarius, it's more of, okay, we understand McClendon and Broderick in front of you, but this past season, there were some opportunities, and they want to know. I think it's more of, let me know the behind-the-scenes stories. Is there – we've seen other guys that, after a period of time, were able to come back. Is there questions of maturity? Is there questions of dedication? Was this a self-preservation? Is this a guy that puts team first? I'm not saying any of those are accurate or inaccurate. I just think that those were questions that were being asked that obviously some teams felt more comfortable in answering. And Cincinnati is a team that says, hey, this is a guy whose ceiling, and I think this is not up for debate, his ceiling is high as any offensive tackle that was coming out in this draft. I think what Coach Saban raised is, there's some of the character makeup, which is, that's what's being brought in question of, is he a guy that puts me over team, or, is there self-preservation here that might have limited his commitment to his team? We don't know that. I certainly don't know that and wouldn't be willing to speak on it. But I don't think Coach Saban was wrong to at least bring up what I personally have experienced, which is teams that are searching for answers more on, what exactly played out this season, or whether or not that indicates something that might affect his ability to stay on the field, his commitment to the team, those kinds of things. Coach Saban was not alone in having some concerns or questions that surrounded that space.
All right, let me do two quick follow-ups with you on this. There was the quote from Mims at the Combine that probably didn't resonate with me at the time the way that maybe does now, where Mims said that he wasn't proud of that game and basically said if he could have stayed in, he thinks that Georgia would have won. But the idea that he wasn't proud of that game in terms of its reflection on him, some people in light of this may take that as an admission from Mims that things could have been different. I don't know that the exact context of that answer is necessarily all that clear, but the idea that Mims said at the Combine he wasn't proud of that game, in light of what Saban's saying here, it does certainly cast those words in a little bit different light than perhaps I saw them to be at the time that Mims said that.
Yeah. Again, I think it's just questions surround that and the way it played out. Right. I mean, it doesn't help if we're going to be honest with one another that Brock Bowers had a similar surgery, tightrope surgery. Who knows recovery times and all those things, but he was able to come back for a game after that surgery in a shorter period of time. So, there's comparisons it can make. Guys heal at different rates. I have no idea how Amarius's ankle felt. I have no idea if he tweaked it in that game, but it did create space to ask those kinds of questions. And I think we are in a different era of players, which we can point to specific cases of guys that are saying, I am going to prioritize my ability to transition to that next level over gutting it out and pushing through certain injuries. We've seen that. So it's not I'm clutching my pearls because somebody questions whether or not you're prioritizing self over team. There's many guys that opt out of bowl games. There's many guys that have opt out during the season or said, this is an injury that I'd rather recover from and prepare for that next step. So generationally, we've invited these kinds of questions into these situations. And that is, that's almost independent of Amarius. Amarius cannot control what other players have done in the past and what other players continue to do as they approach their opportunities in the NFL. But we cannot be offended when those type questions get entered into the equation of, how does that factor in as you project forward? Is this, know, that there's a lot of equity that we're going to invest in this player. And they want to be very certain about the returns. And, you know, the draft, as we all know, there's very little certainty. But if you can answer as many of those questions beforehand, you can at least feel better about your process and your projections of what might be.
All right. The risk of going too long with you, I want to be respectful of your time, but I do want to follow up on that part of this, and then we'll wrap up, which is what you're telling me is, hey, what Saban said on TV was just a reflection of what football people were kind of discussing privately already. So therefore, it's kind of fair game because it was a discussion that was ongoing. Now, there are going to be others who are, you know, perhaps not former players or perhaps not, you know, having private conversations with the coaches who are going to say, man, this is Amarius's night. This is his NFL draft moment here. And Nick Saban's got to make himself the story with a very volatile comment. I thought that, you know, for the most part, Saban earned rave reviews for in terms of how he broke down the draft because he obviously knows a lot about football. But this is one of those moments where when Mims gets drafted, it's his big night. There's more being said about what Saban said than the selection of Mims going there in the first round. Is it fair if it's true? In other words, is it fair to say this if there's enough chatter going on that you know, makes the comment not out of bounds? What do you make about the fact that Saban's comment ends up overshadowing the selection of Mims by the Bengals?
Yeah, I find it almost laughable because we enter into a world of entertainment around sports, and we live in a world, and we've seen it, BA, I know you have, guys that say these inflammatory comments with zero substance behind them, mm-hmm. and yet they have some of the highest ratings out there. Now you've got a coach who knows the game better than all of us and is in the circles, and he's watched the film, and he knows the players, and he's led countless numbers of exceptional locker rooms, who's got fair analysis based on, I can attest, real questions that have circled a player. And you may not like it that you know, that this is part of the discussion, but it is a part of the discussion. So I don't think Coach Saban made it about him. You know, it hits closer to home because it was one of our players. Yeah. If it was an assessment of somebody else's player, I think it was fair. I think what he said is very true to Amarius's story, like it or not. And I'd also say it's not Amarius's night. That because of the what we've made the draft to be, we continue to tell players it's about you. Well, yeah, very quickly they'll realize, and that's as soon as they enter into camp, it's about the team and what you can provide for it. It's a part of a machine. The train is running, and for a short time, there's a few of us that are able to hop on it and ride it and enjoy it. And add to it, but that machine is going to continue on with or without you. I can certainly attest. Mm-hmm. And every player that got drafted over this past week will be able to, at one point or another, say the very same thing, that train's going to keep going, and I just get to be a part of it for this short time. So I think what Coach – I watched the draft probably more so than I have in years past. I thought Coach Saban's analysis was at times exceptional. Mm-hmm. I thought he was very candid and – that can be offensive to people, but I would much prefer a guy that's speaking out of knowledge from a base that you go, well, I can't question his ability, A, to evaluate talent, his ability, B, to know and relate to what it takes and what coaches are looking for to build a special team. I want to hear from that guy much more than the talking head that's loud and says outrageous things with many times no foundation or substance behind it. I don't enjoy that. So I didn't take offense to what Coach Saban felt or said and he expressed. I didn't think he made it about himself. I think it was pretty fair analysis. And now it's Amarius's opportunity, like every other player that was drafted or has an opportunity to go to camp, to either silence those critiques and answer those questions and step up and take accountability for his future. And I'm sure it's going to be a very bright one.
Very, very interesting stuff, John, and I appreciate your thoughts and all of that. Thank you so much for being back today. It's great to be speaking to you live here again there as well. Hope you have a great week, and we'll look forward to having you back here soon. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. John, thanks so much for your time.
I appreciate it, BA. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
The
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
You know, we sort of predicted that Saban would be good as an analyst, and in terms of delivering content that people are discussing, he no doubt, I think, achieved that in his first time out. I guess the one, and I'll have more draft thoughts here in a moment, but the one thing I am sort of curious about is that, you know, Saban's personality kind of privately behind the scenes is a little bit better than what he's maybe projected as a coach at times, so that's helpful for TV. You know, he's clearly got personal, intimate knowledge of the game right now because he was, you know, just coaching. I do think it'll be interesting if you think about, like, when Tony Romo first transitioned from being Cowboys quarterback to being CBS analyst. At the time, you know, he was drawing probably better reviews than any broadcaster's probably ever gotten. He was calling the plays before they were happening. He seemed to have almost like a magical ability to predict what was going to occur during a football game. But if you notice, last couple of years, he's not doing nearly as much of that anymore. And now the praise that he once got has actually kind of turned, I would say, overwhelmingly into criticism. And the best I can explain this as someone who's never, you know, called a game at that level, but, you know, has a little bit of an idea about how this kind of stuff sort of works is that when you get further removed from being a part of the league, your knowledge just sort of starts to go down. That when you're 1 year removed from having been a quarterback, you know, you see the game as it's happening as a player who is as close to all of this as could possibly be. The more time passes, you do sort of move away from that. So this year on the draft, Saban had all these, you know, stories and all these anecdotes. Now, fair to point out that he was more than happy to sort of traverse in this rumor involving Mims. If we're going to be honest, completely honest, there were also a few rumors involving some of his players around the college football playoff this past year. He didn't quite seem to be as forthcoming on some of that. Just couldn't help but notice, honesty compels me to admit, that the willingness to kind of, you know, wade into the rumor mill waters on Amarius Mims, Saban was a little bit more comfortable doing that than some of the sort of, I would say, in many cases, well-founded, incredible rumors involving some of his own Alabama players, but nonetheless. The point is, Saban's got all these interesting stuff to say right now because he was having all these private conversations with people as a coach a year ago. But, you know, the more time passes, the more you're not quite in that same circle. Even if you're the GOAT and even if you're still the most respected figure out there, I wonder if Saban can keep that level of sort of intimate knowledge up as he does eventually become sort of an ex-coach. And I don't care how good of a coach you are, eventually you are just sort of an ex-coach. That the game just sort of moves on, and we'll see what that does to Saban's analysis. But as we predicted, he was certainly very good during the NFL draft. Something else that was better than good, it was great even. That was our Dog Nation cruise. And y'all, I just loved every moment of it because, A, Allure of the Seas is a beautiful ship, the Oasis-class ship. But the opportunity to do the specially themed Dog Nation events, this is on NFL draft night. Just a great group of Georgia fans having a good time and enjoying themselves. Just a wonderful, wonderful experience. We gave away so much stuff. And if you check my, you know, X account out, look at Nestor there, getting a chance to be a winner. He walks away, won a Mikel Williams autographed jersey. That's the level of giveaway we're doing on a Dog Nation cruise event. We're giving all kinds of stuff away. Look at Kaylee dancing there. That's awesome to see. Having a good time and enjoying herself there. A lot of our Dog Nation cruisers there with her. There's Crystal. Crystal won an award. Just an incredible, incredible experience. I just loved every minute of it. Jessica Slater, I appreciate her making all this possible. You can give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. And you may have missed this Dog Nation cruise. Maybe you can be on the next Dog Nation cruise. But you can certainly enjoy some big things. Look at that water, man. That's just gorgeous. You can certainly enjoy some big things with Royal Caribbean here in 2024. By the way, more on that to come. There are some rumors. People are talking. There may be more announcements as it relates to Royal Caribbean at some point in time here coming up in the very near future. All right, let's cruise around the SEC here and talk about some draft stuff. Let me give a shout out to Texas for having 11 players drafted. And obviously one of the things we like to do around here, what was it John said a moment ago, sort of loudmouth talking heads that sort of say things with very little basis in fact. Every now and then that may be what we do, right? We enjoy being a little petty towards the teams that Georgia doesn't like, and that's always kind of fun for us. But it's also important to be honest when honesty is required. And as easy as it is to make fun of, you know, teams we don't like, every now and then a team we also perhaps doesn't like, you know, earns a little bit of credit. And Texas getting 11 guys drafted the year before it makes its move to the SEC, I do think the Longhorns deserve some credit for that. I think I will readily admit that right now Texas looks more ready to be in the SEC than I assumed it would when this announcement was first made a couple of summers ago that they, along with Oklahoma, were coming in here. They've gotten better along the lines of scrimmage. They've just, you know, they've become more of a real living, breathing football program. And the leader of that organization, Steve Sarkisian, after a little bit of a bumpy road in previous years prior to that, just looks like a lot more of a real head coach right now. And of all the teams that Georgia slated to play in 2024, I think we would all say the game at Texas looks to be the toughest. And that is a credit to what Texas is currently building here right now. Now, are their fans still sort of pompous and arrogant and kind of, you know, inflated? You know, perhaps that is the case. Almost certainly that's the case. But, you know, the whole idea of Texas is back, that meme that kind of mocks Texas for its typically overrated status, that doesn't wear quite as well as it used to because they didn't make the college football playoff. They did go to the transfer portal and kind of replace guys like, you know, A.D. Mitchell, who moves on to the NFL. You know, you go out and get an Isaiah Bond. Like, they've been able to successfully fill some needs through the portal. They've obviously got a high level of NFL-ready talent there. Arch Manning perhaps waiting in the wings. Good things seem to be happening for Texas. Now, speaking of the petty version of B.A., as we're recapping the NFL draft here, one of the things that did make me very happy, after all the bluster, Michigan ended up not having as many players selected in this year's draft as Georgia did in the 2022 NFL draft. The record still stands after a flurry of seventh-round picks for Michigan, and obviously all kinds of talk they were going to have 20 guys draft or whatever the number was. Ultimately, that's not quite what happened. They did have an impressive performance, but not the same number that Georgia had in the 2022 NFL draft. So I take some credit for, I guess, comfort in that. I do. I mentioned A.D. Mitchell. I also like what his soon-to-be GM kind of said about him. We don't like the anonymous sourcing around some of this draft stuff. We don't like that. I guess, you know, maybe that's an example of Nick Saban at least putting his own name behind what he said about Amarius Mims. But some of the whisper campaigns, the anonymous stuff, we don't like that. The fact that you saw, you know, A.D. Mitchell kind of getting publicly defended there, I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. Now, let me also show you this on the screen here for a moment, that Bud Elliott, who works 24/7 Sports, had an interesting post on X the other day that if you look at where teams were currently situated in the 2024 season in terms of conference, the SEC still, as it always does, had the most draft picks. But if you reconfigure the teams based on where they're going to be next year, the Big Ten actually had more draft selections than the SEC did. 69 for the Big Ten, 63 for the SEC, well ahead of the next best, ACC, with 43. And the new Big 12 only had 24, essentially showing they're just not even real, you know, not a power conference at the same level anymore. But I'm obviously more interested in what's going on at the top there, that we've seen a little bit of, an erosion here as of late, where it certainly seems like the Big Ten might be closing the gap a little bit on the SEC. After all, the reigning national champion is currently out of the Big Ten. The Big Ten has most recently had two teams in the college football playoff, whereas the SEC last did that during the 2021 season. And now in almost any situation where it's talking about the future of college athletics, you always hear about the Big Ten and the SEC being paired up. Oh, it's the SEC and the Big Ten and everybody else. SEC, Big Ten together. SEC, Big Ten always kind of mentioned in the same sentence. Now, based on the overall level of success, these two programs on the field, these two conferences on the field, that should not be the case. But that's essentially the way things are being discussed. And so from time to time, I sort of mentioned Greg Sankey here. I'm going to mention him again here right now. If you're the leader of the SEC, you have to be very, very careful about the degree to which the perception is that the Big Ten is closing the gap on your league. And you've got to do something, I would say, to sort of stem that tide. It's very important in the eyes of SEC fans that their league be thought of as the best league. It's not currently the most lucrative. And given the fact that, you know, some of the things that the league sort of held its hat on, you know, reigning national champs, dominating drafts, things like that, you know, it seems like there's a little bit of an example of the Big Ten perhaps closing the gap here a little bit. There was a situation a couple of years ago where when the SEC was, you know, kind of just not, you know, doing very well in basketball, right? Not getting teams in the NCAA tournament, things like that. You know, Sankey sort of had a little bit of a, you know, altar call with the you know, the athletic directors in the league saying, you know, this we got this got to be fixed. This has got to be better. Got to do better than this. And ever since then, the league's kind of been better. I think it might be time for Sankey to sort of take seriously the idea of, instead of partnering with the Big Ten in terms of seeing how many, you know, extra dollars you can hoard for yourself, how about going back to competing against the Big Ten to make sure this league stays better than that giant behemoth of a league moving forward? I think that may be the new task here at hand. We'll see if Greg Sankey takes that seriously. Now, speaking of Big Ten teams, one final thing to give you here. Dylan Raiola did make his debut for the Nebraska Cornhuskers spring game over the weekend, did throw a couple of touchdown passes. So pretty good reviews for Raiola coming off of that. But I also couldn't help but notice that Nebraska, the team that Raiola is going to play for, one of a small number of Power 5 teams who had no one drafted in this year's NFL draft. So the question is, even if Raiola is as advertised, the spring game would suggest that he might be, even if that's the case, like, how much of an impact can you make on a team that this past year had no other draftable talent whatsoever? I think it's a fair question. And it's a little bit of an example of, you know, say a program like Missouri has done very well of, they may only get a small number of the sort of elite Raiola-level prospects, but they found a way to fill a roster out around these guys, and this past year they were in the top 10. But that is not an easy thing to do. And even if Raiola is as good as his recruiting rankings suggest that he could be, and obviously at one point in time Georgia fans thought that he might be, especially when it was thought that he might be coming here, but even if Raiola is that good, a quarterback by himself is just not changing the fortunes of an organization very much. And so clearly Dylan's got his work cut out for him. I don't know if he'll, you know, have any more AI-assisted poetry coming up or anything like that, but he looked pretty good during the spring game, but he's playing for a team that didn't have a single draft pick. So that speaks to a pretty bumpy road here in the future. We'll make that cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Now, coming up in the days ahead during our Golden Shoe Space, I've got a couple of things I want to highlight that folks did for me and did for us on board the Dog Nation cruise. You're just going to be amazed by some of this stuff. I'm so proud to show you. We'll do that here coming up in a couple of days. But I did, as we get back to business here today, want to do some traditional golden shoes today. So let me show you a few of those. Blanton Carl Lingold enjoying some finished long drink, the zero sugar version of that. So no calories, no sugar, no carbs, I should say. You love that when it comes to finished long drink. Good stuff from Blanton there. We will give him a golden shoe for a little bit of a long drink shout out on the X platform. Our next golden shoe also going the way of UGA Nation 412, one of our great friends, kind of making fun of Florida here, checking on Florida fans after Jaden Rashada comes to Georgia, and Trevor Etienne obviously on his way there too. So folks having a good time with that. Speaking of having fun, I was on the Dog Nation cruise enjoying myself while George was getting all kinds of good news. Ed Hare wrote to me to say, why don't you just stay on the cruise for another week? He says good news always comes during that cruise. So there you go. Maybe I'll just stay in the Caribbean, let the good news keep racking up for UGA. We'll give Ed a golden shoe for that. And then finally, I really loved this story, loved this picture. Tiffany Ard shared that with us, that a couple of Georgia baseball players made Tiffany's daughter's night at the UGA game against Ole Miss, took the time to take a photo with her, learned her name, and even brought her a ball. She says it was the best night ever, worth the price of admission, hashtag golden shoe worthy. It certainly is golden shoe worthy. Diamond Dogs, obviously great dudes, and having a fun season here. You love to see that, and you love the time they took with Tiffany's daughter there going back a couple of weeks ago. That is incredible stuff. Tiffany, thanks for sharing that. We'll give golden shoes all the way around for that. Lousy, stinking Gators. No golden shoes to be given there. It's been 1,269 days since Florida has beaten Georgia, and that number is going to keep on climbing. And that's our Gator Hitter Updater. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia.